joined this afternoon by both Tony Kanaan and co-host of the show every once in a while, David Malukas. Gentlemen, we'll start with you guys. How's the McLaren world so far this year?
I'll let David start because he's in a fun part of the world, on the McLaren world, and I've switched to the other side, so I'll let him talk to you guys about it.
Oh boy. Well, thank you, TK. No, the McLaren side's been incredible. It's been very busy, but very busy doing a lot of fun things. We've been doing a lot of testing, a lot of PR events. I've been doing a lot of cool things that I've kind of had like bucket list down. So it's been good. I just actually came back yesterday from a test. So we getting comfortable with the car, building chemistry, and starting to kind of figure out what my team's going to be going into next year.
Cool. So let's put you on the spot to start here. You've worked alongside a TK now for, you know, a couple months ish, give or take. What's it like?
Oh boy. Oh man. It's just TK's been awesome. He's been very busy, incredibly busy. But with the short times that we have talked, it's been very helpful. Honestly, the biggest thing for me is just coming from where I was previously to now, it's kind of just been the big changes, just having a lot of resources, and it's something that I'm not really used to. And it's just been talking with TK and trying to figure out how I can use these resources to the best of my ability, just to kind of get ready for this next season. And that's kind of like kind of been the biggest change and the biggest difference. And also he's just helping me, you know, get comfortable with everybody and trying to introduce me and see how everybody's going to mesh together.
So I feel like you guys are among some of the busiest, probably the busiest team and set of drivers within IndyCar. But did you get a chance at all to follow the Rolex 24, watch some of your McLaren colleagues and some of the McLaren GT3 cars go racing?
I watched it a little bit, but to be fair, I mean, Rossi was out pretty early. Then it started getting late night. Then I went to bed. I woke up. I mean, Pato was just like lapped down. So I was like, okay. So, you know, everybody that I was looking at and rooting for was kind of already out of it. So, yeah. And then after that point, it was my test coming up and just started focusing on the test day from yesterday.
So I'm going to throw this one to TK. Your role since you drove in the 500 last May has obviously changed and evolved, especially since then. So can you talk us through A, how it changed, and B, how did the whole process come about since May ended?
Mike, it's interesting because I've known Zach for 30 years, and my role has changed twice already in less than a year. I don't know if that's just when you get a job like that, is it a good thing or it's a bad thing, you know? But I mean, honestly, it started it when I signed with Zach in October of the previous year. I said, can I come to the shop more often until the 500? Because I didn't want to show up to one-off race. I needed to know my guys. A lot of my guys are on the F1 test car, so I was not going to meet them. So I just wanted to hang. He said, sure. So sure enough, from, I would say, December on of last year until May, I was in the shop all the time. So it's almost like I became a full-time driver. And, you know, you're in the shop and I'd help pick up the trash or do something that eventually involved to, why don't you come to every race? So, and then I also asked to come to every race up until the 500 so I could, you know, and so but you're there over the week and you're like, can I help? And yes, then I went from a timing stand to a timing stand. So on the third race, Zach was like, why don't you come to do this? Why don't you become a special advisor? And you come over every race weekend, just the race weekends. I know you're going to retire, blah, blah, blah. I said, sure, great idea. Well, May goes by and I do that. Start enjoying it, still going to the shop once a week. And then by the time we got to Laguna, you know, I was still racing in Brazil, some stock car races in Brazil. Sure. So it was really, really busy. I wasn't planning to go to every IndyCar race. So I told my wife, hey, we're going to be good. We're going to have the summer. Sure enough, And then in Laguna, he was like, "Hey, I need you to come in full time." I'm like, "Full time? What am I gonna do?" He's like, "Well, actually, why don't you tell me what can you do, and we'll talk about it." So me, naive enough, I should know better. I went home, and to impress the boss, I made a list that was huge, and I presented to him. He read it. He says, "Good." I said, "What do you mean, good?" "Good. You're gonna do all that." I'm like, so I thought he was gonna pick something.
Sure.
I said, "Zach, I can't." He said, "Well, you wrote it. Of course you can do it." So anyway, that was it. And I'm loving it. Obviously, a different dynamic. This 9 to 5 thing, it's I'm still getting used to it. It's a little bit different, but it's been so much fun. Obviously, I was extremely involved on the decision of getting David to the team. I'm really proud of that, the guy that he is, and he's shown so far previous to be driving for us, and so many challenges. I think it's for me, like I said, I'm putting probably a lot more effort that I did when I was driving, because it was more natural. Here I'm still learning about the business, and to be fair, there are a lot of things that I've learned that as a driver that I used to complain, or I used to think one way, that now that I'm on the other side, I understand a lot better. So I'm enjoying it a lot. Sorry, it was a long answer, but
That's okay.
that was the story.
So I feel like McLaren has gotten us really hyped about this car launch coming up on the 6th, 7th, 8th, right? In just over a week, I guess it is. I don't know how much you guys can say, but can you give us a little taste of what we can expect, or how excited we should be? I'm pretty pumped for it.
I don't think, David, have you seen it?
I haven't seen, well, I don't know if I say I could see it. I saw on the edge of somebody's computer. It did say confidential and I wasn't supposed to see it, but I saw a little bit of it. So it's been in the back of my head, but I'm pretending like I don't know anything.
Obviously, I've seen it. I can't say I haven't, and I love the way they do things. Obviously, when you talk about paint schemes and stuff, it can go either way, right? I can put a big hype on you guys, and you go, "Well, that's not my style." But I think, knowing Zach and his team, I can assure you guys that it won't be disappointed. I think you guys seen the McLaren F1 paint scheme launch, how successful that was. So I can say we're gonna make some noise. That's all I can tell you.
Cool. All right. Now, if you're not excited before that, now you have to be excited after that. So, David, you tested last week. You were in the car Monday, right? And
Yes.
you ran the kind of first half of the 2024 year spec, no hybrid for right now. It's 40-ish pounds lighter. So, how did the car feel? Does it feel, a little bit quicker because it's somewhat lighter, or not a huge difference?
No, it's a pretty big difference. It's You could definitely feel how much lighter it is. Going also from the testing that I've been doing with the team, it's been hybrid. So going from hybrid to this, it's a big change. And I loved it, and it was kind of like my first taste of getting, how the setup's going to feel, how I can compare it to what I've been used to with non-hybrid. And I've thoroughly enjoyed it the entire day. Setup feels very good. And also trying to figure out where I want to go with my setup. It's like, I'd say right now with the way things are looking, it's going to be almost like an in between Pato and Rossi.
Okay.
But it's still, we're still figuring out a lot of things. And yeah, I mean, it's crazy how different it is from a hybrid car to the non-hybrid, especially with the 40 pounds lighter. It's massive.
So comparing your driving style to Pato and Rossi, how do you kind of fit in the middle, or what are you taking, if anything, from either of your two teammates so far in testing to kind of, mold into your own driving style?
Yeah, and I've honestly, I think for me, a lot of where my driving style came from is from Indy Next. I spent about 2 years there, roughly, kind of weird COVID year, but that car, it's such a specific way to drive, and you have to be driving to the absolute max. The wheel needs to be, I mean, it's like pure chaos. The rear is all over the place. It's pure oversteer. And that's something that I really adapted to and got used to towards the end of the Indy next season, because you kind of just had to for that car to be successful. And it's something that's carried over going into IndyCars. It's I like a more of a free setup on the rear. And Pato's is very much on that extreme side. But his is like intensely extreme. I mean, that guy is like Mr. Fast Hands. No matter what car he's in, where he's going, I mean, he is going to the absolute max, and it is on rails. So the setup is a little bit more towards Pato's side, just not as much on the extreme, with tweak taking a little bit of tweaks in here and there from Rossi setup. And I really like the ecosystem. You know, going into it, I had some questions on which way things are going to go, but I actually think it's worked out really well. And I almost feel like I can connect with both drivers. I can trust that whatever changes they make, we can pick and choose from both of them, and it's not going to be such like a drastic window of changes.
So TK, I feel like no interview for the next, I don't know, several months is going to be complete without someone asking you about the induction into the IMS Hall of Fame. So I have to ask you how that feels, and if you ever even considered like that would be something that happened to you one day.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.
Stay ahead of the pack with the latest racing news and interviews from the Hammerdown Racing Report, your source for regional racing action as well as the national scene. Every week, we recap racing action from all around Northwest Ohio and Southeast Michigan and cover national racing series from the World of Outlaws to NASCAR. Plus, get all the latest racing news. Join hosts Scott Hammer and Ron Miller, along with different featured guests each week. From dirt to asphalt, we have you covered. The Hammerdown Racing Report, available weekly on your favorite podcasting platform.
Well, Mike, honestly, I'm glad that they did it while I'm still alive, so I can enjoy that, because I thought those kind of things happen when you're gone and you never get to see it. So I was surprised. I was obviously, you know, how you guys probably know how involved I am with the Speedway. I'm extremely involved with the museum. I try to help them, you know, in any way, shape, or form. I know they'd actually just got a huge donation, I mean, from different people, but we're going to go through a huge transformation, which is great. I live in India, I take my kids there all the time. Anyway, the president of the museum texted me a month ago saying, I need to speak to you. And, you know, nowadays, I'm flat out. So I'm like, listen, go ahead on a text message. You know, it's like nowadays, that's how sometimes we communicate. He says, no, I need to FaceTime you. I'm like, man. I mean, okay, but so I'm like, yeah, we'll talk. And anyway, like 2 weeks goes by, and he's like, Tony, I need to talk to you. So anyway, I felt bad because I was really busy. And then he told me it was a really cool surprise. Obviously, you know, I don't think any race car driver starts racing because, you know, you want to be famous or you want to become part of the Hall of Fame or anything like that. You do it because you love it. But one of those things happen, honestly, at this point in age, it's pretty cool. I mean, I think, and then you look at the names and you're going to be there. I mean, winning the Indy 500, it already makes you a forever Indy 500 champion, part of a very small club. But that is, it's cool. I mean, cool to share that with my kids, honestly. Cool to share with all the fans. And, you know, obviously, I'm not driving anymore, so nowadays I take any compliments or rewards that I can get. But I can't wait. I think it was, if you guys haven't seen it, but I, my sister wrote a pretty cool statement about it. And I posted a very natural, which I was totally against to post that because I think I was trying to translate to my wife. So yeah, I mean, I'm humbled and honored to receive that.
You touched on something there that I wanted to ask a little bit more about is just what is the feeling that you get to really share this with your kids as they're a little bit older? Like, how do they look at your career? Because obviously, I mean, they weren't probably super involved in the early days, but now they get to look back on it with you. And that must be really cool.
I mean, if you think about it, I mean, by the time my other three kids were born, I wasn't doing very well anymore. So it's not like they saw me winning. One of my kids saw me winning the 500, the other three almost 2 years ago. But to me, honestly, it what is really cool was that I was able to race long enough that now they all know what I've done, right? If like you're two, three, you're never going to remember. But to me, the most important thing is now that they understand that, it's not about what I've achieved, but it's about how I did it and my story of life. You're always trying to set an example for your kids, but also I think my story, if it's going to inspire people, that's why I tell the story. I don't tell the story because I want to brag about it or I want people to feel good or bad for me or like compassionate. I think it's one of those things that, you know, it's cool to see when two of your kids says, man, I want to have your passion for something, which they're still discovering what to do, right? They don't want to drive, not in sports. And I said, that doesn't matter what you choose. But if you're going to choose it, do it right. And how much you gave up. And they all seen that because obviously me being racing, they actually had to pay the price because I'm always gone, right? Uh-huh. So I mean, out of the four kids, two of them, I wasn't even there when they were born. The day they were born, because also, so it was important to me because of that. And then I think having them around and understanding how important that was and how we inspire people, that's all I care. I mean, the trophies and stuff, they're so used to it that they grow up, they look at the Borgwarner like, oh, that's a piece of metal there, whatever. You know, why do you have to wear a ring when you win? You know, so, but to me, that was the most important thing.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I love that. So you were part of the David Malukas recruitment process. And, you know, what did you see in David before he was a McLaren driver that you were like, listen, we definitely have to have, you know, this kid on your team, especially when, you know, he's probably not that much older than at least your oldest kid. So as he drops his microphone here. So, you know, what was that whole process like? For those who can't see, David is getting very close to the camera so he can pretend he's ultra listening.
Well, Mike, I have to say it's a huge responsibility for me because that was my first task as my new job, right? That is the most the part that I probably understand the most about my job. So the biggest thing, it wasn't hard to sell David, right? I brought that up when they go, okay, obviously we had a list. They asked me for a list. He was on the top of my list, and I'll tell you guys why. But then you need to sell that because what I see, it's not what they see.
Sure.
Because I've been on both sides. That is actually part of my job nowadays is to make that mid ground saying, no, it doesn't happen like that because I've now played both sides. And then obviously engineers go by results, but then you go, well, okay, but I'll give you an example. When I was hired by Michael Andretti, I had finished 12th in the championship that year. So that means 11 guys ahead of me. Okay. A couple of them had contracts, but they were better than me. Why did Michael hire me? And Michael hired me first race for him. I was on the pole, second race, I won the race. And a year later, I won the championship for him. Would you have hired me? Well, then that's the vision, right? So, but that was Michael. And he had raced against me. So I had raced a little bit against David, but it wasn't. So they go, oh, well, we're going to go to the results. Well, we got to consider the team. So it was a process. And it got to a point that I actually had to say, are you guys going to trust me or not? And not because they didn't trust me. It was, we had a few other options. And then there was always a debate. And I'm like, and I'm not saying that because he's here. I've kept saying, that's him. I that's who I want. You guys are asking me who I want. And I was afraid it was getting late because I was fully aware of everybody's situation. That's another perk of being a driver. So I actually went to see his dad in his bus. And I mean, I actually had met his dad on an airplane and I had no clue it was his dad. If you guys have met, he's a character. I love the man. He got into the plane and saw me and basically typical, like a huge race fan, yelled, "Come on!" The entire plane turned around like, who is this guy? And he had a team shirt on. Anyway, but that was the only interaction. And once I sat down to talk to him, I said, I came out of that meeting. I said, I will put my job on the line, but we're going to get him. So that was how much I was involved. Obviously, Zach and Gavin, those guys, then they all went through the results and stats, and it wasn't hard because he had them, right? He had took a consideration how big of a team he was and what the performance of those teams are. So yeah, there was just no pressure to David, right? My job is on the line, so we'll see what's going to happen.
I love it. Go ahead, Frenchie.
So I guess I just wanted to get both your perspectives on the team dynamics a little bit. I feel like you guys have some of the most popular, but also like entertaining and kind of, I don't know, I still wouldn't say Rossi's like the social butterfly, but like his personality is out there, right? He's not afraid to show who he is, and neither are you, David or Pato, right? So, I mean, I think that draws fans to you, but that it all just seems completely genuine, the videos that social media posts and everything. So is that really the dynamic that you guys have all the time? Is that what we're seeing?
Yeah, no, of course. You know, from our side and from the social side, you know, there's no kind of script or rule. It's kind of just like, hey, just be yourself, you know, just be how you guys are. And I mean, straight off the bat, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, Rossi to start was a little bit intimidating. You know, the guy doesn't really, but once you actually get to know him, he's a really nice guy, really funny, and actually has a lot of personality that I feel like he kind of holds back a little bit. So having Pato there and now me coming in with the trio, like it kind of comes out a little bit, and overall it's going to be a fun year. A lot of good content. I mean, that stuff just comes naturally with this trio, and with the content side from Arrow McLaren, they do a really good job just from ideas and creative ideas on where we want to go, what we want to do. So all around, really good group of people. And from, yeah, just from a content side of things, even I'm just having fun. Like, you know, if, you know, normally drivers say, I don't want to do the content. I just want to drive. But it's, they actually come up with good ideas, and all around we have a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, it looks like if they put a camera on you, then they can find something good, right? It's what it seems like.
I obviously, just to add to that, I think it's part of the team culture. That's what we preach a lot at the shop with the guys. I mean, it is a very serious work. We all have huge responsibilities. We have a huge brand behind us that automatically people are expecting us to perform, to win, and to be the best. So why not have fun? So that is Zach's mojo and Gavin. Every time we have a team hurdle, that's the number one priority. If you're not having fun, why you're doing it? You know, and I think those guys are, you know, obviously the three of them. Rossi pretends that he is serious, but you guys get to know him. He's a pretty funny guy.
So I only have one more question. It's just kind of curious, something I mentioned to David earlier. You have the first half of the year car spec, and then you have a hybrid component coming in some point after the Indy 500. So, you know, both from a driver's perspective and a former driver's perspective slash working for the team, you know, Is that as challenging as it seems to those of us who have never been in a race car before?
Oh, yeah, big time. I think you talk about weight difference, like, you know, you talk about a completely different system. You're talking about changing that right in the middle of the season, which is the busiest part of the year. That is a lot of challenges. I'm not going to sit here and judge their decision, because it's easy to criticize or not if you don't know the behind the scenes, right? So it must be a reason. I fully support IndyCar for that. And it's no different than you get a sponsor and they're in the car and they expect you to win the race. And, you know, we're very capable of people. We're going to figure out, but it is ideal. No, but I'm not. Definitely IndyCar didn't, or IndyCar and Chevy and Honda didn't think that they want to do that in the middle of the year just to say, oh, you know what? We want to give these guys extra work because they're working as well. So I think it's always part of a change. And anytime you have a big change like that, it takes time to adjust. And I think it's going to, in a way, as a race fan, it's going to shake up the championship quite a bit, because who knows? Who figures it out first and who's better prepared? Obviously, the bigger teams are always going to be better prepared, you know, most likely. But it's going to be interesting. So, you know, we can sit here and talk about, oh, should they wait? And but as a race fan, if you guys want excitement, you have it. So we'll see what's going to happen. But yeah, it's going to be a lot of work. But you know, we've been doing a lot of, as a team now, we're extremely lucky because we are one of the four teams that actually have been testing. So I would say it's going to be debatable that we have a little bit of an advantage, but you say that and then all of a sudden we'll be the ones struggling because we know the most. Who knows? But it's not going to be easy, but hey, we're part of a series. We'll support the series and we'll do whatever it needs to be done.
David?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it's a really good way of putting it that it is going to be very hard from everybody's side, from IndyCar to the teams to the drivers. But from a fan's point of view, it definitely will shake things up. You know, the testing from a non-hybrid to hybrid, the times did vary quite a bit between the teams. And there's just so many more items that you have at your disposal from a driver's side to an engineering standpoint. So many different capabilities, possibilities, just like it opens up a whole new realm and they just keep adding to it. And from all these tests that we've been learning from, it will definitely have, I think, add like a pretty big gap to the field on where people are going to be, even between the teams that have been testing. So I do believe that maybe, you know, we will have a bit of an advantage if the hybrid does end up coming out halfway through the season, but it'll definitely shake things up. Like it's going to make things very interesting. So in some ways, if you look at it from that perspective, they will be good. But in other ways, right now it's a bit tough because we're focusing on the first half of the season, but in the back of our heads, we're always like, okay, well, you know, we have these few days off till the next race. Maybe we should try working on hybrid strategies and start looking into that before it actually comes in mid-season, if it does.
Frenchie, anything
I think
else?
I'm good with that. No.
All right, guys. Well, listen, we appreciate the time. You know, best of luck this year. We'll see you at the track at some point. And car launch is next week, the 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Yep.
And we'll share it all out and enjoy, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
All right. See you guys.
See you.
Hey there. My name is Michael Laminato, and this is Pit Pass F1, a brand new podcast that'll take you closer to the action of the world's most prestigious motorsport. From Monaco to Miami and Australia to Azerbaijan, Pit Pass F1 is on the ground and has you covered. Esteemed F1 journalists Julianne Serasoli and Chris Medland will take you inside the sport every round. They'll keep you up to date with the latest news breaking in Formula One and the most influential views shaping the world of Grand Prix racing. Every Friday, we'll be bringing you a track guide and race preview, and Chris and Drew will be in your feed every morning from Saturday through to Monday to keep you up to date on all the day's action on and off the track. So if you want to be in the know on the latest in Formula One, subscribe wherever you get your favourite podcasts and visit us at evergreenpodcasts.com. Pit Pass F1, a brand new show for Evergreen Podcasts.